This is Karen Musgrave, and I'm conducting a Quilters SOS Save Our Stories interview with Crane Johnson. Crane is in Eagle, Idaho, and I'm in Naperville, Illinois, so we're conducting this interview by telephone, although I would really wish that we could do it in person. And today's date is August 4th, 2008. It is 11:04 in the morning, and thank you so much for taking the time to do this interview with me.
It's my pleasure.
Please tell me about your quilt, Bow River Aspens.
Well, this quilt, Bow River Aspens, it's based on a photo that my husband took on this dream trip to Banff and Jasper, Canada, that we took last October to coincide with our 30th year wedding anniversary. And when he took the picture, we were standing in this aspen grove that was the biggest aspen grove I'd ever been in my life. And so he took the picture, and right then and there I thought, this has got to be a quilt. So that's why I chose this quilt.
Tell me about how you made it.
Well, when I made this quilt, I first took the photo, and I just used it to get the color and the light and the proportions. And I just tried to translate mostly the feeling of the quality of light. And also, it was, these aspens were tall, so tall that I was overwhelmed by it. It was like being inside a Bev Doolittle print. I don't know if you know that artist.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly as I was standing there. I said, oh my gosh, we're in art. That's what it was like. And so that's what I wanted to translate. And that's what was so exciting when the quilt was finished, because when I look at it now, I'm immediately transported right back to that place in Banff. It's just, it's wonderful. I love that quilt.
So how do you use this quilt?
This quilt is hanging in our living room. And it's going to, this one's a keeper. I actually have had two or three people ask if I wanted to sell it. But no, this one, you have made lots and lots of quilts, but when I look at this quilt, I'm immediately transported back to this place in Banff, which I find amazing. I'd love to go back to Banff. It was the most beautiful place I'd ever been. And I've been in a lot of places. It was gorgeous.
Is this quilt typical of your style?
I wouldn't say it's typical of my style. I do two different kinds of quilting. I do a lot of bold, bright quilts, a lot of bright, bright colors, and I do a lot of intricate piecing. And then I also do a lot of what I call freedom quilting, just putting fabrics together in a more improvisational manner. And this quilt is kind of a focus towards some more naturescape type quilts that's based on photos, because I live with a photographer, so I always have a wonderful resource there.
What techniques did you use to make this quilt?
In this quilt, I first, for the background, I took just thousands of little pieces of fabric, and I laid them all down on the background and stitched them down to, I wanted to create that feeling of light coming through the trees. So I first created the whole background, which was, that was new for me, and that was fun, because a lot of times I'll just start with background fabric, but this time I built up my own background first, and then I kind of made some curvy parts in the foreground, so you'd have that feeling of walking back into the trees like we did. And then I laid the other fabric on top, applied it down for the trees, and I put the black on the bottoms, because these trees, I don't know if it's because of the snow or what, they are, these had big, big sections of black way up, much higher than I'd ever seen on aspen trees. So I put that down, and then I put more leaves. And this was one of those quilts where it was almost hard to stop, because, you know, you thought, well, I could put 3,000 more leaves on, or I could stop. That's where I finally just had to say, stand back from the quilt crane and let it go. So that's what I did.
Tell me,
I usually hand quilt. I hand quilt a lot of stuff and machine quilt, but I love to hand quilt. But this one is all machine quilted.
So tell me about your interest in quilting.
Oh, boy. Let's see. I made my first quilt boy, in high school, about 38 years ago, just a twin-size quilt made of squares on a Sears Kenmore machine my parents bought me. But after I'd made that one quilt, a couple of my younger brothers took the sewing machine apart one day. They were trying to find parts, they said, to build an amplifier. So it was probably 3 years before I borrowed somebody's machine and ever made another quilt. They deny this, of course, but it's true. They did take the sewing machine apart.
So how many hours a week do you quilt?
Let's see. I've been working more lately, and so I probably would used to quilt and work between, I'd say, 20, 30, sometimes 40 hours a week. And lately it's down to under 20 because I also have a part-time job that I do, which actually helps me in my quilting because in my job I work for a hospital and I work with OBs, baby doctors, and I do a lot of numbers. And so the more I work with numbers, I don't know if it's that left brain, right brain thing, but the more that I work with my left brain, the more creativity I have at home. So sometimes I'll be working away and I think, oh, this is a good idea, this is a good idea, this is a good idea.
Are there quilt makers among your family?
Absolutely not. My mother can't even sew a button on. Nobody in my family. Of course, now I have a lot of quilting friends, but no one in my family ever sewed.
So what made you make your first quilt?
I had failed a home ec class, and I had never failed a class before. In fact, I was like one of those straight-A type of gals. Anyway, I failed this home ec class, so I was determined to try and do it by myself. And because I grew up in New Hampshire, and because of the colonial aspects of living in New Hampshire, I thought, you know what? I'm going to make a patchwork quilt. So it was really hard to convince my parents to buy me this Sears sewing machine. It's the aforementioned failure in home ec, but they did, and that's how I did it.
How'd you end up in Idaho?
I met my husband in California, of course. He's from Idaho, so of course a girl from New Hampshire and a guy from Idaho can't meet anywhere but California. So that's where we met. We lived in California for a while, and then we moved to Idaho. I love Idaho.
How long have you lived in Idaho?
We first lived in Idaho for about 12 years, and then with my husband's job, we moved to Chicago, and we lived in Chicago, hey, right near you.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we were there building the Deep Tunnel Project in downtown Chicago.
Wow.
And we were there for almost 3 years, and then we moved to Syracuse, New York, and we were there for almost 3 years, and then we came back to Idaho, and we've been back here just under 13 years.
Do you think that your work reflects Idaho at all?
Oh, absolutely, yes. I do. I think the bright sunlight here, the heat in the summer, the cold in the winter, I think I really see that in my work. I see it in my bright colors. I used to say when we lived in Syracuse, all my quilts seemed a little foggy because of all the humidity in the air. But yes, we are very active outdoor people, so a lot of the work I do seems to reflect the beauty of the outdoors.
Tell me about the quilt groups you belong to and why they're important to you.
Oh, let's see. I belong to a lot of groups. I have a small group, 10 of us. We call ourselves the Nimble Thimbles, local. I have a local quilt guild called Boise Basin Quilters, and then from there I go out. For example, I have belong to a regional group called Association of Pacific Northwest Quilters, and then nationally I belong to International Quilt Association based in Houston and American Quilters Society based in Paducah, and then I've been online with quilting groups. I started with the Genie Online Quilters back in 92, maybe we started, and that is what morphed into Quilt Art, which I'm still in today. So that's very important to me, the what we get from Quilt Arts. Very, very important community.
How is it important to you?
I think it's important because what it's done is it's made the world smaller, and it has, at the same time, you're amazed at how big the world is. I don't know if that makes sense, but you know, you can be talking to somebody from Israel or somebody from Brazil, and then a minute later, you're reading something from somebody in Boise, you know, 6 miles from me, and you realize that men and women, because both men and women are quilters, you realize that, you know, people in our world, we all have the same hopes and dreams and interests and concerns, and they all, we can all share that through quilting. It's a wonderful resource for life as well as our actual art and craft of making a quilt.
Now, what about your local group?
My local group is Boise Basin Quilters. We just celebrated our 25th anniversary, and I joined them not the first year. I think I've been there 23 years. And that's, I think it's very important to have a local group and to appreciate your local group. We do a lot of community outreach. We make quilts for the local hospitals, bereavement quilts, and there's a gal in our group that's very involved in Project Linus that we'll make quilts for that are given to police, and so they have them in their possession. So if they, you know, somebody, they pick up a young child that is maybe in a domestic violence situation or whatever, they can comfort them with a quilt. And the bereavement quilts are another very important part of this process. We give those to the hospitals, and they're used in the nurseries, which I work for, OBGYN doctor, so it's very important to me to keep that up. And then on my own, I have worked with a lot of local groups to make quilts. I've worked with third and fourth graders in my local Eagle schools. We've made quilts for Ronald McDonald House, Habitat for Humanity. I worked with a group at the local alternative high school, and we made a couple quilts for a local Christian children's ranch, and we've made more quilts for Habitat for Humanity. And I love passing on that idea of doing your absolutely best work for something that's given away. I really love to do that. And I think it's important for people to see. And I find most kids today totally absorb that idea, and they push it forward. Sometimes when I read that, you know, kids today are, you know, selfish or whatever, I find completely the opposite. And I love teaching kids, and I love teaching boys. And this sounds silly, but it's true. I've observed that boys, because they play so much Nintendo and video games, have such incredible hand-eye coordination that I can tell a 9-year-old boy, I said, okay, see, this is what a quarter inch is. And they go, okay. And I say, I want you to put these two pieces of fabric together, and I want you to sew all the way down this long seam that distance. And they're like, oh, all right. And off they go. And it's shocking. I have adults that have quilted for years that can't do consistent quarter-inch seams like I can have 9-, 10-year-old boys do. So I'm always amazed at that. And I get them on my side by telling them. I say, I want all the video game players in here to raise their hand first. I said, because you're going to be the best quilters. So they are. So that's fun. I love to do that.
Have you ever used quilting to get through a difficult time?
Oh, I would say that, I always have had at least 100 or 200 or 300 projects going. And so quilts have always been part of my life, good times or bad. I mean, I can zone out with quilting and, you know, let the world go by. And when I hand quilt, I've always joked around that I think a group of hand quilters sitting around could solve all the problems in the world. Because you can't quilt fast, you can't quilt slow. When you hand quilt, you get what's called quilting speed. And it settles you down, and you can just really think and relax. So, yeah. I would say I have used quilts through difficult times.
Describe your studio.
Ooh, I have a really fun studio. My family calls my studio Crane's World. It's a very long room. I imagine in regular people might have actually called it a family room instead of Crane's World, but it's very long. Let's see, I have a fireplace, a TV, a DVD. I can play music. I have a computer, a couch, and a dog. That's what's in my studio. And a sewing, well, at least two sewing machines. All quilters have at least two machines, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
What kind of machine do you use?
I use a Janome. I have used many Berninas in the past. Right now I use a Janome, and I use an old Pfaff. And my Pfaff is an old 1471 workhorse that I just take with me, like if I'm going to teach young groups and young people. Nobody could. I think I could swim across the ocean dragging that Pfaff along with me, and it would, when I got to the other coast, it'd say, all right, dry off and start sewing. So it's my old friend. But I love the Janome.
Which one do you have?
I have the 6600. I did have the 6500, but I upgraded.
Good for you.
I know. I sound like a Janome ad, but it's true. I love the Janome. Even though I've had Berninas in the past and love them, right now this is just a good machine for me.
Whose works are you drawn to and why?
Oh, who do I like? You know, I really, really like Carol Fallot. I've always liked Carol Fallot, and I think it started when I was in Chicago. The quilt guild that I belonged to met in Hinsdale, which is a little bit west of the city. And she was, and this was in 1990. And she would come by and give workshops because she lived right nearby. And right from the beginning, of course I loved her sense of design and color, but her dedication to people and empowering other people is something that so impressed me, and that I have taken that forward on my own. And when I teach people now, I've always thought of her and her generosity in quilting that I really appreciate. And the other person I really like is Joan Colvin. I know she's passed on now, but I'd always liked her work. And I taught at the Sisters Quilt Show. And the first time I taught, I had taught a lot locally, but I had never taught there. And she was teaching that same year. And I'll never forget how kind she was. And, you know, she just came up and talked to me and gave me some ideas. And so I've always appreciated her.
What advice would you offer someone starting out?
That's a great question. And I just taught a local class the other day, and I gave them this advice, is that we have so many demands on our life with work and home and family and all that. So I said, why have you decided to take time out to make a quilt? And I said, because it's important to you that you do something with your own hands and you watch yourself create something. You know, and so I tell people, you know, it's not about perfection. It's about creating something and being totally in control of the process. I said, you know, I'll teach you color, but if you don't want to use color, you don't have to. I always tell people it's, you know, called color theory, not color law. And I want people to enjoy the process, not think they have to be perfect. So, yeah, I want people to enjoy it. And I always tell people, you know, you always get the standard line, I'm not patient enough to quilt. And I tell people that's completely opposite, because quilting doesn't take patience. Quilting creates patience. I firmly believe that. Some people are harder to convince of that than others, but I really think that's true.
Interesting. I'll have to think on that one.
Yeah, really think on that, because, you know, most people just think it's the opposite, but it isn't. it really does create patience. And the thing is, because you will start noticing that, you know, you put two pieces of fabric together, and almost those two pieces encourage you to add a third and a fourth. And then the next thing you know, you have become part of the process. And I think inside of all of us, we all want to create. And I, by the way, I also think everybody's creative. You know, if I say and you don't think you're creative, I can convince you that you are. Because I think it's a learned skill. I think some people are more talented than others, but I think creativity is a totally learned skill that anyone can learn. And so I'm always trying to convince people of that. Or convince themselves of that. That's the secret.
What do you think is the biggest challenge confronting quilt makers today?
I would say that people are, they're not letting the joy be part of it. They're saying, you know, how fast can I do this? Sometimes I want to say, this quilt is going to take you forever. And somebody will laugh and go, ha, but it's like, no. I go, look at it in the long haul. Just have the joy in the process of creation, not in, you know, can I make this in 8 hours or less? Or what's the quickest way I can get it quilted? I think, oh, my gosh, you're, everything else in your life is telling you, hurry, hurry, hurry. I don't want people to hurry when they quilt. I said, I'd rather you made one quilt a year that you totally loved and absorbed in you than, you know, pull out 10 obligation quilts. That's what I ask people when they come to a class. I say, okay, is this an obligation quilt? Because if so, I'll teach them different than if they want to learn. Because an obligation quilt is like, you know, how, oh, I got to make a quilt for my aunt, my sister, her dog, my, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you think that this is kind of a reflection on Americans being product-driven?
Absolutely. Yes, I 100% agree with that. And I really try and counsel people to completely take the opposite tact in their process. In other words, just enjoy the process. It's like somebody goes, I don't like binding a quilt. And I'm like, well, why not? You know, can't you find the joy in every little stitch? You're like, oh, I'm going, oh my gosh, look, we're almost at the end of this journey. But yeah, so many people, we're way too production oriented. And I think that sometimes people, you know, throw out 100 quilt tops and say, I don't know what I'm going to do with all of them. I want to say, I don't know, start and finish each one. One at a time. I can't convince everybody of that, that's for sure.
Do you think of yourself more as an artist or a quilt maker, or do you even make the distinction?
I consider myself an artist, yes. And I would further that by saying I think every quilter is an artist. The same way when I look at somebody that can make a perfect pie crust or a perfect pie, or I live with my husband is an incredible musician and photographer, and I think that when we take the time to create, we are creating art. And so, yeah, I have no problem saying that I'm an artist. That's the hardest thing to convince people of. You know, I don't know if I'm a quilt artist or I'm a quilter. It's like, well, you know, whatever you feel comfortable saying.
All right, is there any aspects of quilt making that you do not enjoy? You talked about joy.
Yeah, you know.
But is there anything that you kind of dread when you do or not?
No, actually, no, I don't. I like to take each part when I'm in that part, and I like to have that whole part absorbed. Like if I'm cutting, I like to cut, and if I'm, you know, designing, I like to design. So I made it, I think I made a decision years ago that I would, if I was going to do this and I was going to take the time to do this, I was going to love every bit of it. And so far that's turned out to be true.
What do you think makes a quilt artistically powerful?
Well, that's a really good question. I think if you're drawn into the design, like maybe it's by how you react to how a quilt maker uses color or the use of light or their theme or you know, I think of Nancy Halperin's, for example, her archipelago from years ago. I still look at that quilt. I can look at that quilt and go, oh, I love how she improvised on those little light extended triangles she used in that quilt. If you looked at it, taking all the pieces apart, it's a very simple quilt. But that was a very artistically powerful quilt to me. Do you know the one I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. That, yeah, I love that quilt. I hadn't thought about that for a long time. That's nice, yeah. Thanks for a nice memory.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you.
What do you think makes a great quilter?
What would make a great quilter? I think it would be someone that has a passion for the craft and that bubbles over into the ability to, what am I trying to say? You know, to be able to translate that passion into their work. Again, I think of Carol Fallert and her work. You see somebody that really has a passion and has put enough time into it that she has translated that into her vision. I think that's what makes a great quilt maker.
Besides Carol, who else has influenced you?
I like other artists. Like I love the pointillist artist Surratt. And since you're in Chicago, you'll love this. I remember when we first went down to the Chicago Art Museum, and I'd always loved, you know, my whole life I'd loved George Surratt, and I'd loved his Sunday afternoon. And I still remember the day I walked around the corner and actually saw that real picture
mm-hmm.
there in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
That's just amazing.
It doesn't make you stop in your tracks.
It stopped me in my tracks. Mm-hmm. So I love him. And I think he so relates to quilters because, you know, you just take, just like you take little pieces of fabric and you make something big, he took all his little dots and made something big. And I also love, because I'm from New England, I'm sure, I love Charles Wysocki. That kind of sense of simple life and the ocean and that feeling. I like that.
So how have advances in technology influenced your work? You said you hand quilt, but you also machine quilt.
Right, and I also...
You've changed sewing machines, so...
Yep. I think I love technology. I love the fact that, you know, for example, you know, like I tell people in hand quilting is great, machine quilting is great. I love that I have this technically wonderful sewing machine. But the thing that I really appreciate most about this is, it's funny because I just, a couple weeks ago we had a Boise Basin Quilter Show and I entered this, I don't know, about 50-inch photo transfer that I'd done. And I've been doing photo transfers since, oh my gosh, like the late 80s when I used to have to send, I remember I was living in Syracuse and I had to send a photo transfer out to the Great American Quilt Factory in Denver, Colorado, the only place in the country that you could actually have this, you know, photo mysteriously entered into fabric. You know, and then I went through the By Jupiter phase when you put the gel on the pictures to transfer them. And then I went through my Bubble Jet Set phase where, you know, you made your own photo transfers. And now you look at technology where my newest lust is EQ printable sheets. To me, they're just nothing short of magic that I can, and again, I can take my digital camera, I can enter a photo into my computer, I can go to Photoshop, I can play with it, I can edit it, and then I can print them out. I mean, to me, that is technology. And I was just talking with somebody the other day about, they said, how did you do that picture of that deer? And I was like, you know, I don't know, it's just amazing that that's a photo transfer. So, yeah, definitely, I think technology has really, really helped us in quilting to what we're able to do now versus what, you know, was impossible, what only 15 years ago. So I'm all for technology.
Tell me about your Forest Service quilt.
My Forest Service quilt?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Oh, this is a wonderful quilt. In 1993, Idaho had the privilege of having the tree go to the United States Capitol for their Christmas celebration. And as part of that, I was asked to make a quilt for the head, the chief of the U.S. Forest Service. He had started his career in Idaho. So I made this quilt. I looked into his life. I found out all these different places that he had been in his career in Idaho. And I took photo transfers of about 20 different places in Idaho from pictures my husband had taken. And I transferred those into blocks and put them inside sawtooth blocks. And then the center, I used a picture of, I applicate a picture of Stanley Lake, which is a wonderful lake in the middle of the sawtooth. And I got it all, I hand-quilted it. And we went back to the gala at Washington, D.C., and we were there for the lighting of the Capitol Holiday Tree and the gala in the National Botanic Garden. And it was like a fairy tale. And it was just like being in a fairy tale. And we presented the quilt to him, and he just loved it. And he kept it in his office, and he just retired, I think, just like a year and a half ago. And so he said he was going to take it with him when he left office. So I thought that was really nice. Very nice person, too, by the way. So it's nice to give a quilt to a nice person.
Was it difficult to give the quilt away?
No. You know, I never had a problem giving a quilt away, because when I make a quilt, I like the fact that I'm, you know, stitching this for someone else. But I do have a funny story about giving a quilt away.
Oh, excellent. Tell.
It's a great story. All right. My son was about 6. He's 24 now. And when I tell the story now, he always goes, oh, Mom. But I had made a quilt for this really good friend of ours that was getting married. This man was a confirmed bachelor, and he was finally getting married, and so I had made this kaleidoscope quilt, and I dyed all the fabric for the border, and my son was 6 at the time. I told you, he helped me stir the dye, and so he was a very important part of this quilt. I hand-quilted the whole thing, and when we got ready to mail it, we're on our way to FedEx, and my son looked at me in the car and said, I want this quilt. And I was so shocked. I said, well, it's not your quilt. It's Steve's quilt. We're going to mail it to him, like, in 2 minutes. And so he didn't say anything else. We get to FedEx, and he goes, no, I want the quilt. And I said, well, honey, you can't have the quilt. So I, you know, told FedEx, I said, all right, I'm going to do it overnight. When we were in Illinois, and so it was overnight to Ojai, California. And so, you know, a day went by, and, you know, I didn't hear from them. And I was like, wow, you know, I kind of wished I had a call saying they'd got the quilt. And so I thought, oh, maybe, you know, they're busy with wedding, whatever. So anyway, I get a call 2 days later from FedEx in Chicago, and I go down, and they say, you have a package here. Now, my mother used to send me packages all the time when our son was little. I never thought anything of it. Picked him up from school. We went to FedEx, and there's the quilt back. And the thing is that my son had said, you know, right that night, that when we got home, he goes, you know what I'm going to do? He goes, I'm going to pray that the quilt comes back.
Mm.
And I said, well, you can't do that, Brian. And he said, absolutely, that's what I'm going to do. And I said, no, that's not what you use prayer for. He said, no. He said, if I could talk to God about whatever I wanted, I'm going to pray that the quilt comes back. So I just said, you know what, fine, go ahead. He goes, fine, I will. So when we go back to FedEx, and there's the package, I go, what happened? They said, I don't know, it went all the way there, and we must have gone to the wrong house or something, because you had signature required and we couldn't find somebody by that name, and we brought it back. So my son, who's standing at FedEx with me, looked at me, and I went, fine, it's your quilt. So I made this couple another quilt, gave it to them for their first wedding anniversary, and I still have this that quilt. I call it the boomerang quilt, and I'm going to give it to Brian on his wedding.
Oh, how nice.
Isn't that a great story?
That is a great story.
I know, I love that story. Yeah. Like I said, even though he's 24 and I tell it now, he goes, oh, Mom. But.
So what did your family think of your quilt making?
Well, I think because we've always led, as a family, a very artistic life, that they take it for granted that I'm an artist and I'm a quilt maker. I've always had a dedicated space. We've always treated art as, like I said, a natural part of life. I think my son probably grew up thinking everybody had, you know, parents that played music and, you know, took pictures and, you know, went to museums and went to quilt shows. And, you know, I think when he, as he got older, he was shocked when he found out other people's moms didn't have sewing machines and fabrics everywhere and design walls up on walls. You know, he grew up with big, huge design walls and rooms and thinking nothing of it. So, but I think that's good. So they've always taken me seriously. Like I said, I have my own space called Crane's World. So.
Well, we're getting near the end, but I always like to ask people if there's anything else that you would like to share.
No, I think I'm good. This has been really delightful. I really appreciate this.
Oh, thank you so much for, you know, taking time out of your day to share, and you were great.
Oh, thank you.
So we're going to conclude our interview. It is now 11:44.
All righty.